Welcome to this week's edition of World Crisis Radio. This is Webster Tarpley speaking to you from Washington, D.C., and we are looking out at the vast panorama of chaos and destruction of the reactionary and fascist Republican Party. We are essentially in the process, the last throes, the death agony of this reactionary, monstrous creation. And it's a good job they're going, because this was one of the main blocking points for the entire national interest and survival of the United States. These antisocial psychopaths, wreckers, saboteurs, plutocrats, megalomaniacs, backward, bigoted, racist, reactionary, anti-worker, plutocratic. They are the main reason why the United States can't keep up with the foreign competition, because we've got this indigestible, cancerous mass of saboteurs who shut down the government. They block necessary investments. They stifle all reforms. They bust all the unions. They oppress the minorities. And they're constantly, in order to foment their political projects, they've got to use the cultural populist wedge issues, which are the death knell of the society. If you let them go far enough, you're going to get civil strife, civil war, if you will. Trump is another name for civil war, right? Give it 2 or 3 years of Trumpism in the White House and you will have something that you couldn't even dream of right now. Maybe Jefferson Davis could imagine it, but a normal American wouldn't, right? So if you are an American, you cannot vote for Donald J. Trump, okay? Because Donald J. Trump is a fascist and a nativist and a splitter. He can't be a nationalist, because he wants to attack about a quarter to a third of the entire U.S. population. Right? Everybody with a Hispanic last name, everybody who might be from the Middle East or be a Muslim from Indonesia or Pakistan or any other place around the world, all the way from Morocco to Indonesia. No, no, that's a whole zone of hatred for this dilettante Trump. That's the other thing. Fascist. We've seen him. He's a fascist. But an amateur fascist, right? You can be a little Hitler or a new Hitler, but to be an amateur little Hitler, a bungling amateur who makes it all up as they go along, right? This is what is coming forward. So one of my other themes today is in praise of some American institutions. Yes, the United States, thanks to these wonderful people, John Adams, who read Machiavelli. Machiavelli, of course, who read, it's Polybius and his version, his commentaries on Titus Livius' history of the Roman Republic, the question of the division of powers, the checks and balances. We can also read this in a fascinating piece of writing, Machiavelli's Draft Constitution for the Florentine Republic, checks and balances, separation of powers, and so forth. But if we look at someplace like China, we see there's the tremendous price you pay for not having a legitimate form of government that satisfies the democratic impulse, satisfies the democratic demand to be part of the big decisions, but at the same time offers safeguards, slows it down. The majority rules, but the rights of the minority are guaranteed constitutionally. So these are institutions that have something to be said for them, a lot to be said for them. And here's the big one that I would focus on. The long season, the long campaign. How many times have we heard oligarchs, hypocrites, plutocrats say, oh, why don't we have a situation like Britain, where they declare the election one day, and within about a month, they actually hold the election, right? It's all over in a month. Well, with Trump, thanks to the fascist demagogue, bully, thug, goon, Trump, you're seeing why it's better to have a longer process, why it actually makes sense for that process to be articulated in states. We don't want a single national primary that would be dominated by what? By money. It would be the joy and the fulfillment of the billionaire's dreams to have a single national primary. The whole idea is you're going to go through these areas. The electorate is different. In some places, the holy rollers are the big majority. In other places, it's the petty bourgeoisie of different types. You know, you're going to have Silicon Valley. You're going to have the automobile industry. You're going to have all kinds of issues. This is also why Trump has said that he's not going to do any more debates. He damn well better do debates, or somebody should use that against him as a powerful argument, because the West, for example, the great American West has all sorts of regional issues. These mainly have to do with water, with land, right? We've seen the fascistic agitation around the public lands and how certain hoodlums and thugs want to essentially squat on the land and then have it given to them for free, right? And I'm sure the Koch brothers grubstake those miners, right? Those people. But you get the idea. There are all kinds of regional issues, right? There's a California drought. There's a problem of transportation. All of these things, regional issues. So that's why you've got to have it go through, pass through these regional ramifications and articulations. So all in all, the reason I'm saying this today is that it looks to me like the long season is taking its toll on the fascist demagogy, right? Trump had planned what? Blitzkrieg. This is the concept invented by General von Seeckt of the Reichswehr already. The German army in the 1920s was thinking about how to get revenge on France. And they said, well, rather than have this endless trench warfare where you get bogged down and the casualties escalate, try to have a coup de main, right? Try to have a quick attack that knocks the adversary off balance and they're never able to recover. And that way you win. So that's the Blitzkrieg. La guerre brusque, as it was written about, right? So you had De Gaulle writing about it. You had Guderian, I think, writing. Anyway, you had all kinds of people, right? So there was a debate about whether this was possible. The one thing you can say about the U.S. system is that the Blitzkrieg approach, where you try to take everything and wipe it all out and shut it down within a couple of weeks, very hard to do, very hard to do. So I think we are now, we are the beneficiaries of these intellectual and moral and political giants, people like John Adams, Machiavelli, and the others, right? Alexander Hamilton, for sure, beginning to get a little bit of the recognition that he's been denied by these Jeffersonians. Jefferson essentially represented the slave interest in Virginia. Jefferson wanted limited government. You know why? He wanted a government that would be so weak and so divided and so impotent in terms of military means, an army, that they would never be able to touch what was closest to his heart, the institution of slavery, because that was the basis of his faction. So thank God for the long campaign. Imagine if we'd had the election, say, in November of last year, right? That's more than a month, right? A month would have been at the end of July or sometime during August of last year. There would have been a vote. And this is the phase when the manic phase is on, right? When the inebriation and the utopian feelings come to the fore. But thank God we don't have that. And now the long season, the long slog is taking its toll on the fascist demagogue Trump. He's going down. He's going to be a loser. Back in a minute. Welcome back. In Washington, D.C., April 1st, 2016. And we're going to take a look at the Trump numbers here in just a minute. But the general sense is, and you can hear this from any number of commentaries across the so-called ideological spectrum, narrow though that is, there has been some kind of a sea change a watershed has been passed, and the momentum is now trending in a different direction, at least at the moment. Now, the main critique of this is, well, that's just because this month-long period started 10 days, 2 weeks ago, and really the activity has been limited, right? On next Tuesday, we're going to have the Wisconsin primary, upon which much will hinge. But then there's another, 2 weeks until the New York primary and some others. So you can say the reason that it looks like Trump is being forced into the retreat and the defensive is simply because there are no elections, right? If he wins the New York primary with more than 50% of the votes, that would obviously change things. But now there is a possibility that that will not happen, right? So we have to take a look at this. Now, the New York Times. Okay, wonderful. The Gray Lady, headline today, GOP fears Donald Trump as zombie candidate. Damaged but unstoppable. Alexander Burns, April 1st. This is serious though, huh? Who in, Donald Trump has mocked a political opponent's wife. Not only just mocked her, but made fun of her physical appearance at the most infantile schoolyard bully act, defended a campaign aide arrested on a charge of battery, and suggested punishing women who pregnancies. He may have surrendered any remaining chance to rally Republicans strongly around him before the party's July convention in Cleveland. He has intensified his slash and burn, no apologies approach to the campaign, which is simply a tantrum based on no prep, no work, a dilettante, right? A bungler, a Hitler, right? You want to invade the Soviet Union? Want to make sure you have some overcoats with the troops? Oh no, because of my triumph of the will and genius, it's all going to be over in a couple of days, right? The blitzkrieg. Well, as I said in the previous segment, the beauty of the U.S. system is that you really can't do that, can you? And he still wants to do it. He says, I want to go to the convention, and after the first ballot, whoever gets the most is the winner. No. For 150 years, it's been you need an absolute majority. You want to have your entire party united around one candidate. And if you can't do that, you're going to be swept aside. Anyway, let me get back to the wonderful analysis of the New York Times, right? And I say wonderful because we want evil to fight evil. The personalities of these people are of secondary importance. What we are looking for is the destruction, root and branch of the current system. And because the Republican Party has chosen to cultivate a lunatic, anti-historical, anti-reality ideology, essentially destructive, subversive of the American form of government, full of racism and all the rest, the destruction of the Republican Party is now the available and indeed necessary way to go about reforming the system. And don't worry, we're going to split the Democrats after that. That comes second. The Bernie wing and the Hillary wing, right? Today, Hillary says, oh, God, those Sanders people are always lying about me, right? She cackled with her strident and shrill voice. All right. Here's the New York Times, though. This is the big quote from today. Republicans who once worried that Mr. Trump might gain overwhelming momentum in the primaries are now becoming preoccupied with a different grim prospect that Mr. Trump might become a kind of zombie candidate, damaged beyond the point of repair, but too late for any of his rivals to stop him. This is what the Republicans deserve for shutting down the government, for demanding killer austerity against the American people, for promoting their dog whistle racism, their mentally impaired president, Ronald Reagan, Alzheimer's, water on the brain, and was also an intellectual lightweight from the very beginning, right? The guy who went to Philadelphia, Mississippi, capital of racism, I suppose, and fell asleep in the presence of Pope, and on and on. So here it is, right? Republicans who were once worried that Trump would pick up everything are now worried that he'll be a zombie candidate, damaged beyond the point of repair, but too late for any of his rivals to stop him. Yes, it's possible. Now, the lighter side of this, right? We've done the zombie candidate, the chaos candidate, but he's also the Kim Kardashian candidate. Yes, Kim Kardashian candidate, because, of course, he doesn't do anything. He's famous for being famous. He has no answers. He has no policies. He has no program. This is coming from Cruz. I think Kasich says the same thing. I have said this a couple of days, right, that it's Kardashian, right? The celebrity is famous for being a celebrity. And the main problem with celebrities is that sometimes they drop off the screen. Like, you know, François Villon of France, the famous poet, right? Where are the snows of yesteryear? Where is the valiant Charlemagne? Well, time has taken them away. In our time, it's where is Paris Hilton? She has been swept aside, and today Kim Kardashian rules the roost. But who knows who it's going to be tomorrow? The national conversation is always changing. So he's the Kardashian candidate. Now, look, as I went through, I think my analysis of the previous week is now getting more and more confirmed. As I told you, Trump to make a shift, if he had been an intelligent demagogue, a careful, calculating, effective demagogue, in other words, a real formidable fascist instead of a lightweight, he would have said, oh, the bombs in Belgium, this calls up again all the horrors of November 13th in Paris and the killings in San Bernardino, California. And now it's time for Donald Trump, the protector, the Lord protector of the United States and the world, Cromwell, right? Dictator. Bad guy, Cromwell, bad. Trump also, very bad. So he'd say, I'm going to protect you. Come to me and shelter under my wings and my faction and my aegis, and I will take care of you. And don't worry. And of course, he didn't do that. He chose to roll in the mud with Lewandowski and attacking people's wives. So he has been digging his hole into the abyss with Trump. Back in a minute. Welcome back to Crisis Radio. So we're in the pause here in the primaries, and the smoke has cleared a little bit, and there are at least the premises for a successful counterattack on the Trump blitzkrieg. The shock has now been absorbed, and the pushback is ongoing. And of course, we're delighted to see evil people fighting other evil people. This is the way it should be. Not that the Republicans are free to turn their full fury on the undefended flesh of the American people and indeed the world population, but that these psychopaths should fight among themselves and destroy each other and take away the specter of this unspeakable political party. It has to go. And after that, we'll need to split the Democrats into two parties, essentially a Wall Street party with Hillary and people like that, Chuck Schumer, Durbin, other people of this type. And then there'll be another group, which is now energized, right? Thank God. And that will be the people who today follow Bernie Sanders, although Bernie Sanders is no leader. Bernie Sanders is a miserable excuse for a leader, a right-wing social democrat who won't fight. Apparently he signed his own, whether signed figuratively or literally, he signed his own pledge that he would contend with Mrs. Clinton, but that he wouldn't do anything to damage her for the November election. This is impossible. The only way you can deal with Mrs. Clinton is when you get her on a stage, you have got to mercilessly hound her, something like what Chris Matthews did to Trump. In other words, given the obvious patterns of evasion, prevarication, manipulation, it was necessary for Matthews to follow up on some questions, right? And we got these issues of abortion, right, that Trump thinks that women should be punished. By the way, I don't know if we can get back to this, but what Trump says about punishing women is what the anti-abortion movement really wants. They don't want it spelled out. They wish to hide it. They wish to finesse the issue. But that's what they want. They want women punished in jail, God knows what, in the stocks. That's what they do want. But they don't want you to say that's what they want. That's the that essentially explains the vehemence of the pushback against against Trump on that. And then, of course, the other one, which really dwarfs all these others in importance, is if you're asked about nuclear weapons and you're going to be campaigning for president of the United States, you have to say, we can't discuss this in such a format. This has got to be formulated with extreme care. Hear where Russia, China, and the rest of the world hear every word. We have to proceed very carefully, and I'm not going to comment about this, right? And I'm not going to comment about the use of nuclear weapons in the Middle East, which he did comment on, nor will I comment on, and again, you can't even say this, right? But I'm trying to say it now. I will not comment on the hypothetical use of nuclear weapons in Europe. You just don't talk about it, because any mention of this in a very unstable world is likely to set off unpredictable consequences, right? Remember, the there was a whole school of people led by Barbara Tuchman of the Kuhn-Loeb family who argued and convinced Kennedy, and it might have had some use, right, that World War I started as a war of miscalculation. It's not true. That is not what happened with World War I, but it turned out through some happy providence that when Kennedy went into the Cuban Missile Crisis, he was under the influence of this concept, right, that you don't want to promote war by miscalculation. Then you go down in infamy. You become Nero, okay, or worse, right? So you don't want that. So you've got to be able to shut up. This is one of the things that was said about Stalin. I read a number of interesting books about Stalin. One of them talked about die Fähigkeit zum Schweigen, Stalin's ability to shut up, keep your mouth closed, say nothing, be silent, radio silence. That served Stalin well, at least at some points. You want that in your inventory, in your armory, say. But Trump doesn't have this. The motor mouth, the scissor bills, the big yap, right? Put foot in mouth, chomp on foot, right? This is the crazy Trump. He can't shut up, especially if you touch something that he values. And, of course, he wants to be number one, the winner in every category. Hey, what about your wife, Trump? Oh, he explodes, right? What about your business empire? Are you really as rich as you said? He gets down to claiming that he got only $1 million from his father back when that meant something. Anyway, you get the idea. So there is no ability to shut up. So this means that Trump is perpetually off message. Thank God. You might say the answer to that would be, he has no message, right? Sanders says you can't fact check Trump because he has no facts, right? That's from the point of view of an adversary. If you went into the Trump campaign, you might find somebody saying Trump is off message. But the problem with that is, what is the message? Well, Marshall McLuhan, the medium is the message, right? The medium now is the medium. Does that mean a fortune teller? But in the case of Trump, the medium is Trump. Trump is what brings you this stuff. And what Trump is always arguing is essentially the main thesis, right? That he is capable of the triumph of the will, that he has charisma in the sense of Max Weber, very dangerous, very irrational concept, right? Very, very iffy. And, you know, in the context of Hitler and all that. So he's always off message. Except if you understand that his message is only himself, the triumph of the will of Donald J. Trump, the blonde beast, the Superman of the airwaves. The problem then is the American people have still not lost their appetite for eudaimonic legitimation. In other words, a government is supposed to deliver the goods. There is this memory of Franklin D. Roosevelt. It may be in the collective unconscious, wherever it is. The idea that through the proper policies of regulation and dirigism, right? Dirigism for sure under FDR, you can make the human condition better. And a lot of it involves scientific discovery, industry, application of technology, therefore a rising standard of living, progress towards full employment, and all these other things. This is what people eventually want to hear about. With Trump, every time he's on television, it's this obsessive repetition of his latest cahier de doléances, right? The cahier de doléances is his list of how he is wronged, right? All the outrageous things that people have done there. They made fun of my wife. They made fun of my campaign manager. They twisted my words here. They sent their own goons to my rallies and all this stuff. A whining, carping fascist, right? And this is self-destructive because you've got to be a fascist. You've got to be a big, powerful, aggressive winner, not somebody who's always whining about how they lost. So this takes us, I think, into the inherent weakness of Trump, especially the fact that if this is repeated over time, as the American long campaign requires it to be, that's very, very difficult for Trump. Now, also remember, the amount of money spent on demonizing Trump is, I would say, minimal. And what we're going to see, hopefully, in the election campaign, is that the Hillary campaign, they're impotent, but there are going to be other super PACs that come in and demonize Trump. Seriously. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. This is Webster Topley here in Washington, D.C. So, the psychological disintegration of Donald J. Trump, the man who would never back down, never issue corrections or retractions, had to do it within a couple of hours. One can imagine a bunch of these sleazy campaign people that he has, right? Third rank, low quality yes men going to him and say, Mr. Trump, now this is really going to be it. If you don't take that thing back about punishing women for abortions, that's going to be curtains and you'll be finished. So he had to do it. So this is the idea. And remember what Trump did in a cynical, naive way was to say what those pro-life people really want. How can you imagine a policy of family formation based on a police state? This is the thing that has always struck me about the so-called pro-life, is that they want to solve things with a police state. If you're going to monitor women at this level of their personal lives, that takes the most ferocious police state we've ever seen. So Trump is going to bring you a police state for sure to deport the 12 million Latinos that he hates so much. But at the same time, there's another police state, right, that comes up through what's with the health of these women, right, and what's going to happen to them. So you get the idea. It's a double whammy police state. I'm sure it's going to be a triple whammy and a quadruple whammy. But between the deportation, right, rounding up 12 million people for deportation, the holding cages, the use of soccer or, you know, baseball fields and so forth as makeshift concentration camps, then the focus on women and preventing abortion. This is a police state. And I'm afraid the problem here is the Catholic Church in general, right, under Pius XII, did not create Hitler. No, nor did they create Mussolini. In other words, if you want to do the guilt, the weight of historical guilt on various institutions, the British government is ahead of everybody in terms of their support of their appeasement and therefore support of Mussolini over many years, the Hoare-Laval Agreement, for example, on Ethiopia. But Mussolini and Hitler the British actually have the greatest share of this. But unfortunately, the Catholic hierarchy in many places in Germany, Italy, Spain under Franco, and in France under Pétain, the Catholic hierarchy went far towards cooperation with fascism. And after the war, you can imagine the situation of these bishops asking them, well, Your Eminence, why did you cooperate with fascism? And then in the United States, why did you, Your Eminence, Cardinal Spellman, for example, cooperate so enthusiastically with the witch hunt of the scoundrel and drunk and degenerate Senator Joe McCarthy, right? And this gets back, through from Joe McCarthy to the infamous Roy Cohen, and then you've got Trump, the protege of Cohen, right? And I think Roger Stone also part of that intellectual milieu, shall we call it that. So the answer of the Catholic hierarchy is to find issues where they can ignore dictatorship, they can ignore, repression, even, political murder on a very large scale, and they can counterattack essentially the people saying, you are immoral, you have abortions, you use contraceptives, you're in a state of mortal sin, so don't tell me about my political responsibilities. We're going to focus everything on you. So in other words, it's a way to beat people down. That was certainly the model. I think accessible model is what the Roman Catholic Church did, for example, in the Vichy-governed part of France, southern France, or indeed in the direct Nazi-occupied part of France. Get the idea? So there's a tremendous element of bad faith in this. And indeed, how can you take a great religion and reduce the practical content of it to essentially anti-abortion? And of course, since we're dealing here with the spirit of the Council of Trent, there is an idea of punishment. Sure there is. And so therefore, Trump, of course, in his bungling way, in attempting to reproduce the state of mind of these anti-abortion people, he has essentially blurted out what they've been laboring for decades to hide, that there would be punishment for women. Of course there would be. So this is a bad scene. Now, one of the other main things I think we need to talk about is terrorism. Terrorism. I am declaring a watch on, not on the Rhine, but on terrorism. And the idea here is we've got Republican hacks, Republican operatives, who are essentially saying that the way Trump could solve everything and win in November, well, it's getting down to what you might call a September surprise or an October surprise. I have to include September now because we're in the era of early voting. So in the era of early voting, if you want to have an October surprise and make sure people are aware of it, you've got to do that in September or at least early October at the very latest. And what is it? Well, terrorism. In other words, what would validate Trump's bluster, his xenophobia, all the rest of this, his lies? Well, one thing that might tend to bail him out would, of course, be terrorism. So here we are, the Washington Post of the, not just the Republican establishment, but of essentially of the Federal Reserve. So here we are with an article which is actually very bad for Trump. It's the headline on front page, right above the fold. Trump at historic high in poll, but not in a good way. And the finding of this poll, and it's a Washington Post ABC News poll, I think released today, April 1st, 2016, is that Trump would be the least popular candidate to represent either party in modern times, meaning that he's the most hated candidate of the last 30 to 40 years. In other words, as far back as they have this kind of polling, apparently, at least of this data series. So Trump is disliked by two-thirds of the independents. Two-thirds, 67-68%. 80% of young adults. 85% of Hispanics. I've seen other polls which duplicate that 80% of women dislike Trump. So what's that going to look like? How should that work? Well, if we read the jump here on page A4, swing voters lead the disdain for Trump, right? In some ways, you could say this is what they always do, right? The Republican lunatic, extremist, reactionary, bigoted, proto-fascist base always picks the unelectable ones, and then the plutocrats and so forth, the office holders, counterattack and impose somebody more like Dole or McCain or Romney. But what, of course, they complain. Yeah, that's what we're trying to change. But of course, it simply means that the Republican Party is structurally, increasingly unable to put somebody in the White House. But let's get now to the point. Frank Luntz says terrorism could save Trump. Big moments cause people to change. So if you have a Paris or a Brussels in America, that can change the dynamic in favor of Trump. Back in a minute. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. Webster Tarpley reporting to you from Washington, D.C. So here's the article, right? Philip Rucker and Robert Costa, you see these latter sometimes on cable TV. Trump at historic high in poll, but not in a good way. 67% don't like him. The highest negatives in the memory of man. So what might save him? Let me put the context in here. Frank Luntz, L-U-N-T-Z, an unaligned GOP pollster. Well, you've seen him on Fox. Right? You've seen him on Hannity and O'Reilly and things like this. But Frank Luntz, an unaligned GOP pollster, said Trump could erase at least some of his deficit if he capitalizes on the fall debates and other events. My goodness, what are these other events? Noting that history is littered with examples of candidates doing just that. And I quote from Luntz, "The big moments cause people to change," Luntz said. And continuing the quote, "and let's face it, we may have a moment outside of conventions and debates that's even bigger." What could it be? If you have a Paris or a Brussels on American soil, that can completely change the dynamic. Close quote from Frank Luntz. Well, littered, right? Some of us can remember some of the litter. The October surprise of 1980. That is to say, Ronald Reagan, not him, of course, but his operatives, be it George Bush, quite possibly flying to London on a private jet that has never been completely refuted. Whatever some, you know, cringing toadies of the Bush regime might want you to think. That was to prevent the release of the U.S. diplomats held hostage by the Iranians, 1978-79, and then into early 1980. It was a very intense pattern to prevent them from being released because that would have helped Carter. And then, of course, the last time around in 2012, we had Benghazi. The attempt with Benghazi was to have an October surprise in September and to embarrass Obama, right? Obama's campaigning that Bin Laden is dead and General Motors is alive. So let's at least rob him of the first term of that by making sure that plenty of terrorism takes place, right? And all of these stupid, abysmally moronic, cretinous Republicans with all their investigations. The obvious thing is that the stand down order was there, but it was issued by their guy, General David Petraeus. And that's why the CIA paramilitaries didn't step in and shut down the terrorist attack, which they could have done. And there could have been jets coming not from Aviano way up there above Venice. No. Coming from Sigonella in Sicily, an hour or something like that, an hour or two at the very most away, could have come in there to provide air support. Plus, aircraft carriers in the Mediterranean, have we ever surveyed where they were? All of that. So that was one of those attempts. And therefore, I am declaring red alert on this stuff. Any terrorism that occurs from here on in must be attributed to intelligence community factions that are pro-Trump. And they're trying to stampede the American people into believing that Trump is necessary as their savior. Get the picture? All of it. We've got a lot of people in the world now. They've learned to babble false flag. They've learned to babble state-sponsored terrorism, right? They babble, babble, babble. But here's the political point where the rubber meets the road. If any terrorism, right, anything like Paris, November 13th, with what, 130 dead, or Brussels with 30 dead, or San Bernardino, anything like that from here on in, the immediate prime suspect is, well, it may be Trump himself. Sure, could be him. But more likely, and what I'm saying now, is intelligence community factions that are loyal to Trump, that want to promote themselves and their careers through a Trump presidency. So I would say, go ask General David Petraeus. Go ask General John Allen. Go ask General Stanley McChrystal. There's a whole list of ambitious, disgruntled, insubordinate officers who knows? They may decide that Trump is their great chance in life to rescue their shattered careers and to save themselves from the fate of defeated generals and defeated admirals, right? The Limoges, they don't want to be in a Limoges of the mind. They have to do something about that. So we as citizens, we must now be vigilant. This is a big thing. Frank Luntz should be, I would say, subpoenaed to testify. What do you know about this, right? Do you know something? Do you just make that stuff up? Or do you know it, right? This is a huge, huge issue. The Washington Post, of course, reassures us. It's a tall order for Trump to undo the damage his rhetoric has already done to his image with the rising national electorate that includes Latinos, single mothers, and millennials, right? The selfie vote and all this. Anyway, I call upon you now to take this seriously, right? People who have, you know, learned some skills, right? You know, the theory of the patsies, the technicians, the moles, right? You know, the role of the controlled media, you know, all this stuff. But the main thing you got to know is the political cui bono, political cui protest, who benefits. And thanks to Frank Luntz and his yap, right? He doesn't have that ability that Stalin had to keep quiet. But he's got to get himself into the paper. Well, now he did. And the idea that he has put before the American public is a monstrous and huge idea. So any terrorism from now on through the November election must be prima facie, the prime suspect that you have to begin with, intelligence community factions who are trying to stage a September surprise, an October surprise, can be an August surprise too. You get the idea. Once Trump has the nomination, he acquires, and it may be more than one, it may be a rolling bombardment of false flag terror events. This is something that people have to look at, because we see an overwhelming interest in terms of a political interest, apparently in the terms defined by Frank Luntz, for Trump to have these things happen. All right. So that will be now a continuous feature, and I urge you, be vigilant, don't drop your guard, look everywhere for the little straws in the wind, right? Little things, right? Go read 9/11 Synthetic Terror Made in USA. Read it down into the little details, right? That if bases close here, or if warships are deployed here, whatever it is, any of the myriad of precursor events that might be picked up in open source media and so forth. This is what you need to be looking at. All right, now that's the heavy stuff. Let's talk about some lighter stuff. Okay, the National Review, the Buckleyites, the followers of the traditional reactionary and indeed quasi-monarchist CIA asset, William F. Buckley, right, the founder of their so-called conservative movement. Really not conservative, because it's these are reactionaries, right? They're not interested. If they were interested in conservatism, that would mean Abraham Lincoln, and that would mean Ulysses S. Grant. They don't care about that. But we have some interesting stuff here from the Buckleyites, who are mightily threatened by Trumpism. Back in a minute. Yes, back to World Crisis Radio with Webster Tarpley here in Washington, D.C. So, obviously, the political intelligence picture, the forces that are actually behind Trump, urging him, prodding him, enticing him, luring him, perhaps, it could have been an operation done, at the Cosmopolitan Club there in Midtown Manhattan, or something like that, right? Or the University Club or whatever it is, where a bunch of people meet in a drawing room and start, talking to Trump and, inflaming his broken soul, injured ego. He's obviously a little boy that nobody loved. Nobody paid any attention to little Donald, and as soon as they could, they shipped him off to that military academy. And you can imagine the unspeakable pain for Trump, right, which he'll never confess because he's got to be such a tough guy and have no emotions. So therefore, you see, this entire thing that he's got to be a winner, he's got to be number one, he's got to denigrate others, right? He's got to devalue everybody else in order to feel secure, right? This is the typical pattern of the megalomaniac, Trump, delusions of grandeur on the basis of nothing. And he's the megalomaniac, and therefore he's got to devalue the competitors, right? He's got to denigrate them. He's got to talk down them on them. I talk smack in the modern idiom. So that's the situation that he's in. That's why he can't stop talking when people denigrate his wife, his company, his fortune, his father. You got the idea, right? Let me just call up one other thing, because we have some funny here. Funny comments, right? Some sort of byproducts of this. To remember this, you have to recall in the Vietnam War, after the Tet Offensive, Walter Cronkite of CBS News, who then had the largest, most viewed evening news program, Walter Cronkite went to Vietnam and tried to inform himself after the Tet Offensive what was actually going on. And then he came back and pretty much said in one of his televised reports that the Vietnam War was unwinnable and that it ought to be liquidated. And we have this story, which is confirmed by a number of biographers, that Lyndon B. Johnson, president of the United States at that time, had essentially commented to his staff that if he had lost Walter Cronkite, if he had lost the support of Walter Cronkite on the issue of Vietnam, right, and the winnability of the war and the desire to stay in, try to fight it out. If I've lost Walter Cronkite, I've lost the American people, and the enterprise is hopeless, said Lyndon B. Johnson. Now, Is it possible that we've just gone through a similar moment for Donald J. Trump? Now, instead of the august and avuncular Walter Cronkite, we now have Ann Coulter, meaning a rich woman from Connecticut, obviously psychologically mildly disturbed, I think I can say. Rich, plutocratic, and she's somebody who's always, I think she imagines herself to be the reincarnation or the successor of Claire Booth Luce, the other rich woman from Connecticut. And of course we do know some rather nasty things about Claire Booth Luce, but not now. Claire Booth Luce was the U.S. ambassador to Italy during the Cold War and, all kinds of crazy stories about her. But, in terms of, Ann Coulter, I'm trying to call up this, this quotation here from, again, the Buckleyites, right? The Buckleyites over at the National, Review. And what they're always doing is trying to defend the importance of ideology, because that's all they have, right? That's who they are. They are the heirs to William F. Buckley, right? God and man at Yale. Remember, Rush Limbaugh was created by William Buckley. You hear him? Limbaugh talks about Mr. Buckley when he talks about his Institute of Retarded Reactionary Ranting, because he's not a conservative. He's a reactionary. Anyway, we have now Ann Coulter, and I'm still trying to get this quote, but you get the idea. Ann Coulter is telling her friends that she's still trying here. Here we go. Utterly stupid. Here we go. Okay, here we are. This is by Jim Garaghty, G-E-R-A-G-H-T-Y, Jim Garaghty, March 30th, 2016. And here's Ann Coulter. And here she is talking to a guy called Yiannopoulos. Yiannopoulos is a writer for Breitbart, right? Breitbart, the Pravda, or Völkischer Beobachter, right? The Nazi party organ, right? Pravda for the communists, of course. But Der Völkischer Beobachter of Berlin, the Folksy Observer, right? The sort of, you know, Aryan supremacy observer. That's the idea. So this is Breitbart, Milo Yiannopoulos. Now, Breitbart, of course, torn down the middle between Fields, their woman correspondent, who was obviously roughed up, manhandled by the scoundrel Lewandowski. And then the spokesman quit. The spokesman has now started a new career as a cable television commentator. And two others quit, too. They didn't like it either. So four or five people left. Some guy wrote me saying, oh, it's only one person. No, it's almost half a dozen, if you want to look at it that way. So here is Ann Coulter. She says, I'm a little testy with our man right now. Yiannopoulos says, you are? Has daddy annoyed you? Because these people apparently call Trump daddy, right? Maybe they're hoping for largesse, right? It's like Daddy Warbucks. And then, I think that's Felix Warburg, but, yet the, Daddy Warbucks is, Trump for them. So Coulter, our candidate is mental. Do you realize our candidate is mental? Now, mental is a British way to say crazy. For those who don't really follow this, right? In the British Empire in general, mental often means you're crazy. So think of, she's saying, our candidate is crazy. Do you realize our candidate is crazy? It's like constantly having to bail out your 16-year-old son from prison. Let's move past last night's tweet, and you know which tweet I'm talking about. We'll have more revelations on this one. Just a minute. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. We got to pick up the speed here because there's so much to cover. So here we are in the National Review, and we've got the Yiannopoulos of Breitbart talking to Ann Coulter. Ann Coulter, obviously, again, mildly disturbed, is once described on air as a bubbling cauldron of hate by, I think, F. Lee Bailey or somebody like this. Anyway, she's complaining that Trump is crazy. Our candidate is mental. Do you realize our candidate is mental? It's like having to bail out your 16-year-old son from prison. And, of course, she says up to now she has tended to defend Trump as a result of his blurting gaffes and so forth. But now it's the picture of Cruz's wife, Heidi Cruz, and a picture of Melania Trump. So this is the thing that has upset Ann Coulter the most. So I think you get the idea. Now, also in the National Review, we don't have time to go through this in so much detail, but take a look in there. There's another article which essentially says, look, you people like Ann Coulter, or indeed Newt Gingrich, we're going to hear from him in a minute, people who have supported Trump are now realizing that this is the destruction of their rotten Republican Party. At this, we laugh, but the National Review says, wait a minute, all that work of getting all those dupes ideologized and manipulated and getting them together, you're throwing it out the window. Trump rocks the boat for these people. He interferes with their racket. So they're all saying, you know, hey, it's nice that you're coming around now, but we're not going to forget that you have been supporting this guy for, 6 months, 8 months, and so forth. So here's Gingrich. Gingrich has been flirting with Trump. So Gingrich says, tweeting about or repeating a tweet about Mrs. Cruz is just utterly stupid. Yes, stupid, Newt. You're not going to get, you know, you're not going to become vice president, Newt. It has frankly weakened everything that Trump ought to be strengthening. It sent a signal to women that is negative at a time when his numbers with women are already bad. It sent a signal to instability, broken syntax, but to people who may be beginning to say, maybe I've got to get used to it. Maybe I've got to rely on him. Maybe he could be presidential, right? And it has energized Cruz. Now, of course, in Wisconsin, where we're looking forward to it, it's Wisconsin is next Tuesday. That is to say, what are we talking here? April 5th. So April 5th, Maine polls say Cruz 40%, clerical fascism in the lead, 30% for Trump, and about 20% for Kasich. After that, we have the Colorado Republican caucuses. And there, too, it does not look good for Sleazy Don. Sleazy Don is in trouble. So, and the Republican Party, there's a faction in the Republican Party, we've just heard it, that is hoping for terrorism. They're hoping for a terrorist attack on U.S. soil that might allow them to turn around. Spread the word on this, people. This is maybe the biggest idea of the day here. Now, in terms of the destruction of the Republican Party, interesting article by pollster Whit Ayers. Whit Ayers today in the Washington Post, April 1st. The Trump numbers should scare the GOP. So if you want to be a racist candidate like Trump, you got to get 65% of the white vote. And only Reagan has recently approached 65%. But that's in the context of a general landslide. And if you don't get 65% of the white vote, you got to get 30% of the what he calls non-white vote. I don't like these categories. These are not my categories. But those are the ones that have been imposed by identity politics and the divide-and-conquer strategy of the ruling class. So, again, Washington Post, ABC News says Trump is underwater, 72% unfavorable among Hispanics. So the idea is simply being a Trump nomination could lock Hispanics into the Democratic column for a generation or more, threatening Republican presidential victories, essentially ruling them out as far as the eye can see. Great. That's what we want. The destruction of the Republican Party as capable of electing a president. Because if they do, that will turn into a permanent austerity dictatorship. They'll destroy the unions, destroy the right to vote, get that all approved by fascist judges that they'll put on the Supreme Court, and you get the idea. Two-thirds of white women, two-thirds of white women, not even women, but white women don't like Trump. And then we have the millennials. The millennials have now exceeded the numbers of the baby boomers to become the largest generation. Trump's rating among millennials currently, I guess it's 18% favorable to 80% unfavorable, 70% strongly unfavorable. Partisan identifications that are formed when voters come of age politically tend to stick with them for the rest of their lives, and a Trump nomination could push an entire generation into the Democratic column. So this is what I wanted to get out of here. The Hispanics can be locked out of the Republican Party into the Democratic column for a generation, right, as far as the eye can see. And secondly, the Trump nomination could push the entire millennial generation into the Democratic column. So what you're looking at is a reconstruction of some kind of an FDR national coalition. And of course, that is the bigger the Democratic Party gets, the more ripe it is for a split where the Wall Street people are cast into the outer darkness and the New Dealers, the pro-labor, the progressives, what have we, take it over. Of course, lots of problems along the way. Now, the reactionaries are telling themselves, yeah, Romney could have won if he had turned out the 4 million more whites. Well, problem is, according to this account, they say he lost by 5 million, so the 4 million wouldn't have done it. This is all fatuous, because if you go and actually look at the differences in the key states, Obama won by much, much fewer votes than 4 million. We'll look that up for next week. So anyway, they're reminded that there were 12 million Hispanics who stayed home. So 4 million whites didn't vote, but 12 million eligible Hispanic voters did not come to vote. And suppose you could bring out, say, there's an interesting symmetry between the 12 million who didn't vote among Hispanics and Trump's plan to deport 12 million immigrants. 12 million, 12 million. So this is obviously very grim for Trump. Usually a Republican candidate gets at least 90% support from inside the Republican Party. But Trump's negative to positive to negative among the Republicans is 52% positive, 47% negative, 34%, one-third of the Republican Party is strongly unfavorable. So he's got a 5% excess of positive feelings in his own party. So a Trump nomination would put a Democrat in the White House, seriously threaten Republican parties in Congress, and leave the Republican Party in a shambles. Let's hope Republicans wake up before it's too late. No, we say, let's hope the Republican kamikazes strap their steering wheel into place and nominate Trump and destroy the entire thing. Oh, we have to talk about that in a minute, too. That in a minute on World Crisis Radio. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio, hurrying on, hurrying the reactionary Republican Party into the abyss with Trump as its grave digger, as its wrecking ball, as Samson pulling down the temple on the heads of the Republican Philistines, because boy, are they Philistines. The dawning realization that Trump represents a debacle, a catastrophe, and the hecatomb of so many rotten Republican careers at the level of national politics, the presidential consultants, and all the rest of this. The Senate, the House, the Supreme Court, the governors, the mayors, the county executives, state legislators, and all the rest down the line, right? In other words, Trump is like a deus ex machina has come in, and it allows this entire degenerative process, frankly, under Obama, right, because of his lack of leadership, his cringing, kowtowing to Wall Street, standing between the zombie bankers and the pitchforks out there in the country. That's how Obama saw himself. The goal is not to preserve the Republican Party, Barky. It is to destroy the Republican Party by all political and legal means. So here's the final debate. Here's where people should start thinking. And if you want to, give me the benefits of your thinking, because if you're thinking on this in this frame, you're essentially, you're going to be on the right track one way or another. What is best? Is it best if Trump takes the Republican nomination, or is it better if Trump is denied the Republican nomination? Now, let's try to go through these. The first one, Trump takes the Republican nomination. There are a number of ways he can do it. He could have a riot in the convention hall. Remember those Republican congressional aides who rioted to stop the vote count in Florida back in the year 2000? Something like that, a sort of quasi-violent event. Anyway, Trump becomes the official presidential candidate of the Republican Party of the United States. The party of Lincoln offers you Donald J. Trump as its candidate. What's the implication? Well, we got to figure the motor mouth, the constant spewing of denigration, insults, threats, all the rest of this. This goes on. So what it sets up is any Republican candidate, whether it's dog catcher or governor or House or senator, governor, anything, they can be confronted, and we have to assume they will be confronted now, with things that Trump says. For example, all these people, there's an article here about the various the various Senate candidates. There are people like Kelly Ayotte in New Hampshire. There are people like Toomey the Toomer in Pennsylvania. There's Rob Portman in Ohio. There's a whole bunch of these people who are now in question. They're extremely vulnerable. There are also, there's this group of Republican congressmen, liberal Republicans supposedly, but really hardcore reactionaries, in the Philadelphia suburbs and in some others, in Westchester and on Long Island and places like this. So, they've got the great fear because Trump is going to destroy their careers and their lives. And that's the issue. And that's really what we're talking about. How can we destroy the Republican Party most thoroughly? Is it if Trump becomes the Republican nominee? That means that everybody down the ballot, all those down ballot races, they can be confronted. Did you hear what Trump said about using nuclear weapons in Europe? What do you say? Did you hear about Trump wanting to punish women? What do you say? Do you see what Trump does with his misogyny versus women? What's your reaction? So that the entire Republican Party is wrenched off a message, whatever the hell they thought they were going to talk about, right? Repealing Obamacare or something exciting like that. They are going to be forced to orient towards Obama. I'm sorry, towards Trump. Towards Trump. They're going to have to answer for everything that Trump does or doesn't do. So is that the maximum of destruction? Let's compare the other one. The other one is that the Republican Party bosses, the machine bosses of the Republicans, the Reince Priebus element, suppose they do prevent Trump from getting the nomination. Now, at this point, we don't know. Is Trump just all talk? I mean, he may be. If you know, he threatens riots, but maybe he can't deliver riots. We don't know. I think he'd like to deliver riots, but maybe he can't. Maybe he can, maybe he can't. So if they drive Trump out of the Republican convention or deprive him of his birthright, as he sees it, the nomination, right? He's got it. He's entitled to it because of Fred, right? Fred set him up, his father. So if he's ousted as the nominee, he's not going to be the nominee. Will Trump have the guts to go out and start a third party? He could easily buy the Constitution Party or the Libertarian Party. He could get on the ballot, right? And plus some other states, he might have to send out some paid signature gatherers, but you get the idea. Is that the maximum of destruction? Because that would then give you an official Republican ticket with Cruz or Kasich or Romney or Ryan. I think Ryan is a very likely person to make a bid for that, at least. So you'd have the official Republican candidates, and then the press could not go to them and demand that they respond to Trump in quite the same way, because they would no longer be on the same ticket. However, it might be possible for Trump to generate some down ballot candidates of his own. So we'd have a situation where there would be, at least at the presidential level and possibly at other levels, there would be rival candidates. And the idea there is that the, you know, a significant part of the Republican Party, right, a quarter, a third, whatever it is, essentially the 40% or so that, that Trump can get, that they would then be anti-Trump, anti-Republican. They'd be pro-Trump, and they'd come to the polls in November and vote not for the Republican but for Trump, and then at that point the Democratic candidate, Hillary, Bernie, or other, we're hoping for an indictment of Hillary, and then let that be the other. So which destroys the Republican Party more? I would say, in general, the first alternative, if Trump becomes the Republican candidate, that destroys the Republican Party more, because it essentially ties him institutionally and undeniably to every Republican candidate all the way down the line. No matter what they do, they're going to be part of that. So, and a lot of people will not show up. It's quite possible that somebody will form this alternative party, right? We've seen Ben Sasse of Nebraska guaranteeing that he will do that. He will be a third party. So you have all the disadvantages. Trump is the head of the GOP. Everybody can be confronted, and they have to deal quite possibly with a third party. Ben Sasse, you know, he's got moneyed backers. They can buy their way. They can buy the Constitution Party or the Libertarian Party or whatever it is. Now, the second one, if Trump is stopped, you have this problem that you don't know if he's got the guts and the energy to go out and spend his own money, at least in part, and get on these and get on the ballot everywhere. In other words, Trump as a third party depends on Trump continuing to want it. We don't know this. So this gives us, I'm afraid, less destruction of the Republican Party, which is the goal. But I would also say the other side of it is, if Trump gets the Republican nomination, maybe the Ben Sasse alternative goes nowhere, because you're dealing with utterly unprincipled, crazed Republican ideologues, right? Are they really going to go out and form a third party or stay home or defect or whatever, just on the basis of ideology? Because remember, these people, ultimately, they're kind of like Trump. They care less about ideology than money and power, that's for sure. The only thing is, they see money and power as being mediated through the ideology, which allows them to dupe the little people, right? So that's what started to ponder. Is it better if Trump gets the Republican nomination, or if they fight him off? My theory is always extinct the Republican as a national force. Phoenix on World Crisis Radio.